welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm happy to have with me today two guests. One is Professor Ray Elul, who is a professor in the Department of Physics here at the University, but in today's context, he is project coordinator for the project called Vamos Seguro. With him is Mr. Joseph Schiavone, who is the manager of the Meteorological Service at the MIA, and we'll discover what the connection is as we go along. We're here basically to talk about Vamos Seguro, but before talking about this particular project, it's probably important to talk about the project that went before it, because in actual fact this is an interesting case in point, that projects, some people complain, oh, these ERDF projects and then they finish and then, you know, whereas in actual fact it's not like that. You get a project, and the ERDF particularly, where you're talking about hardware rather than sort of just a software project, and this is a case where something was built literally and something is then being followed up afterwards.
First we have had ERDF 078, which was conceived and awarded in 2008. That was about €500,000. Most of the equipment was essentially to upgrade what we had at Jordan Lighthouse, where we monitor the background emissions in the Mediterranean, and in the long term from this unfair climate change, obviously. All our results go to WMO in Geneva. We put in these instruments successfully. They measure trace gases such as sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxides, and so on, and aerosols, very fine dust essentially that is all around the Mediterranean coming from various sources, including the Sahara, but also ships emissions, aviation emissions, and everything else possible. This was finished in about at the end of 2010, and the instruments started functioning and we began to see some very nice results, including major emissions from shipping, I should say. This is one of the big headaches in the Mediterranean.
In fact, I remember when we did an interview about this, I was amazed at the statistic of how many ships actually pass through that channel between Malta and Sicily.
That's correct. About 25% of the world's shipping goes through the straits between Malta and Sicily. A ship's plume is about 80 miles wide and 100 miles long behind it. So we pick up the black carbon, we pick up the nitrogen oxides, we pick up the sulfur dioxides. We identify the ships from the AIS transmissions, a transponder which every ship has nowadays, and we can literally put a footprint to every named ship that goes through now.
So they can't get away with
They can't get away with much anymore these days. We know exactly what they're doing.
And just a mention of Jordan Lighthouse itself. It was obviously in the past a lighthouse because it was needed where it is.
It still is acting as a lighthouse.
It does actually function still.
Oh,
that's wonderful. I wasn't aware of that. But now it's obviously taken on a new meaning, really, the building. And why there?
It's taken on a modern dimension. It was obviously put up in a strategic place where it could be seen from the northwest. We had to locate the instrument somewhere to the northwest because those are the prevailing winds. Also, away from human habitation and, as far as possible, vehicular traffic and so on, so that we would measure clean air, or shall I call it background air, because there's no clean air anywhere in the world anymore now. So that's why we started there in 1996-97. We had only a few instruments those years, but now with ERDF 078, we have put in a whole range of instruments, as I say, and we follow that up with the project Vamos Seguro to monitor and forecast volcanic ash by putting in more instruments to measure more aerosols, the greenhouse gases, and specifically volcanic ash and very fine mineral dust. Because I should say, apart from shipping, the other big pollutant in the central Mediterranean is, of course, Mount Etna, which is continually emitting sulfur dioxide, plumes and volcanic ash, and that we need to pick up. This is a question not simply of academic interest, but is of great interest for aviation safety because aircraft cannot fly through it.
In fact, at this point, I would like to bring in Mr. Schiavone. What is the Meteorological Service's interest in this project? Why are you in on it as well?
Primarily because we are the sole provider of meteorology in Malta as far as aviation is. And when we're talking about volcanic ash, we're talking about quite a specific danger to aircrafts which are flying. And when you have an emission and you have a volcanic ash plume which is developing, and maybe its area is quite so big, and then we have to advise. We have a system where we alert the advisory. There is a number of advisory ash centers around Europe, not around Europe, around the world, but particularly we have to advise Paris, which then will start directing information about the size of the plume and the effects on the aircraft, particularly because an aircraft cannot fly across an ash cloud because of its it has a lot of participles which are abrasive, contains participles of glass, sort of sand, which an aircraft cannot inject in its engines, for sure. So, okay. So there is a safety issue.
We're all very familiar with the Icelandic episode, shall we say. And there were people who said, you know, no, what a big fuss everyone's made. But they didn't stop the aviation worldwide, or at least in the Atlantic area, for nothing, did they?
No, because most probably this was the first major impact for the European area, and you cannot say, okay, let's take a calculated risk, and I have 150 passengers, and then all of a sudden you have a major accident. So there are rules, and in our we are very highly regulated, even as a meteorological entity, so it's zero tolerance. So whatever there is the risk that you're putting the risk of human lives, then you have to go to zero tolerance, and you have either to, if there is the potential, let's say the potential to divert an aircraft, that's up to the captain in command. If no, you cannot fly through that. It produced terrible and catastrophic accidents if we go through
that. We did see a documentary once where some airplane had engine trouble and eventually did land, and then they had a look at it. When they got off the airplane, they looked at it, and it was stripped of its paint completely.
Yes.
And it was a documentary, so I presume this is probably true. So it can have physical effects, actually.
It is, because the engine simply sucks injects into its engine all these small parts. There are so much... we have to think that they are sand, glass, so they are then heated up, and in layman's term, it can lock the engine. So without engines, they cannot fly. Yeah. And they're literally, I've seen a documentary, and I've seen an engine, it was a test, cut into half, and you really have stones attached to the main body of the engine, so it's particularly dangerous.
But we're not just talking about Etna in our area as well. Obviously, Etna is the biggest one, the biggest volcano in Europe, I think.
It's been continuously active the last 3,000 or 4,000 years in recorded history. So this has been going on a very long time. Obviously, it is the one that affects the central Mediterranean most, and the kind of plumes and emissions that we get from there can be measured, can be picked up, and have to be avoided by aircraft on what is quite a busy route, essentially.
It is a busy route, and it happens. Maybe we do not so much publicize these things, but recently Etna was active, and we had an aircraft coming in, and the captain in command passed over a message to the Met Office that he's seeing an ash cloud. So immediately we go on our satellite images, and we focus in what's going on Etna, and it was clearly a plume. coming towards us in the direction of the landing pad. So we have to inform our controllers, the people who are in direct contact with the aircraft, with our details. The forecaster will then calculate the winds, whether the ash cloud is coming onto us, which eventually it did pass over us, but it had very, 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 very minor effect on the civil aspect of it. But as far as aviation is concerned, you cannot go through that neither.
Mm-hmm.
The main reason, if one is interested, is that there is a corrosion in the engines, and it actually blocks everything, even the injection of fuel that passes through the engine. If an aircraft injects a heavy amount of the ash cloud.
Mm-hmm. And what about the direction of it, of the plume coming from Sicily? Etna is actually a little bit further north than one sometimes imagines. So it's coming.
It's actually slightly to the northeast, essentially. And given the prevailing winds and the probability of Etna erupting at the same time, there's only a 14-15% probability of this happening at any one time. So it's not very high at all. But we have to take care of it. And Project Vamos Seguro, which was initiated by the Istituto Nazionale di Geofisica e Vulcanologia in Catania, they monitor Etna 24 hours a day. And as soon as there's an emission, they run a mathematical model on their computers, which tells them in which direction the plume is going, and they alert everybody, including Malta Airport. We will also be installing this program at the University of Malta supercomputing cluster, and we'll be running our own so that as soon as they alert us, we can work out the likelihood of getting it over here. And of course, the airport would be advised as well. As Mr. Schiavone said, as far as civil aviation goes, at zero tolerance, you simply cannot fly through an ash cloud. It's much too risky.
But the plume itself, you showed me before, it's a picture, our listeners can't see the picture, a wonderful satellite picture of the plume. But and it hits us probably only when there's a certain particular wind blowing.
That's right. It's from the north-northeast. It's north-northeast. Oh, the plume is relatively huge, covering many hundreds of square kilometers, essentially, and blankets Malta. It wouldn't actually be visible to the naked eye because it's extremely fine and you just don't notice it.
No.
Except in those cases where you get black dust falling onto Malta. That happened last in 2002, I believe. But that's very rare and it's pretty harmless anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But where aircraft are concerned, they simply cannot ingest this fine dust into their engines because the engines block and shut down.
So
and this has happened before.
They have to divert to another airport. So, what do you tell them to do? Go back home?
The way we work between the Met offices, and we have a very close coordination with Catania and the surrounding airports. So as soon as Catania alerts, in fact Catania will send a message where they would say Etna is erupting, and we will start following the ash cloud or the plume via satellite. Now, if the plume is going to affect our airport, Malta Airport, then we have to issue advisory notes to the air traffic controllers, and then it's up to them to divert. Now, if Catania is affected and Malta is affected, they have to divert somewhere else. I don't know, Palermo, or where it is the most appropriate, because this is an issue which is between air traffic control and the captain in command. We have an obligation towards all aviation, and it's a mandatory obligation, that anything which can harm an aircraft, which include heavy rain, thunderstorms, whatever meteorological conditions we have over our islands, then we have to issue what we call advisory local weather notifications to air traffic control and to pilots. And in this case, this is one of the, I think, very sensitive procedures which we have to follow. And immediately, even as an airport, we have to advise Paris. Paris is the sort of the coordinating center, whereby they will start issuing then updates what is happening in the Mount Etna area, the FIRs, which is the flying regions, which falls out. For example, our FIR is quite big, so we have to advise even Greece.
As far away as that?
Yes, and the surrounding areas. So each country has its own obligations. How we do it goes directly to Paris, the coordinating center, and Paris will disseminate information.
If Stromboli erupts,
yes,
would that plume reach us as well with the right conditions, or is it
theoretically it could, but the chances are even smaller, much smaller than Etna, so it's unlikely. And Stromboli does not normally give out volcanic ash anyway; it's a different type of eruption. All these volcanoes have their own different characteristics. Unfortunately, yes, that's right. The Icelandic one, I won't try and pronounce the name, has a high propensity to create huge clouds of volcanic ash. This is much worse than anything we have in the Mediterranean.
So we're lucky from that point,
yes.
From that point of view. Before, Mr. Chairman, I was mentioning that they happened to be alerted by a pilot who was looking
right
down, I presume, or up, and seeing this plume. What are the instruments? Obviously, that was a physical thing. He was seeing it with his own eyes. What are the instruments are there to indicate?
There are several instruments which can measure volcanic ash, but the most successful one, which will measure it at a distance, is called the LIDAR. It's called light detection and ranging, essentially, where you shine a laser beam at it, and from the reflections of the light that comes back, you can work out that you have volcanic ash. In fact, this is being now miniaturized so that it can be fit into aircraft as well. In the future, it may be possible for them to use it. It's already being used on an experimental basis, I believe.
You obviously lecture at university. Do your students ever get a chance to get involved with these kind of projects?
Well, we in the final year, we have plenty of projects on the subject, obviously. We are now well equipped. There is almost €1 million worth of instruments in Jordan Lighthouse, which will also pick up volcanic ash, though not using LIDAR, using other instruments. And yes, certainly there are plenty of projects that students can get involved in. And the station regularly sends reports to everybody, including WMO. And we also send our data to the Met Office insofar as weather is concerned. So everybody cooperates with everybody quite willingly, and we share information and help each other.
So what you've done here, in fact, is sort of officialize, in a way, something that was being done in the past.
That's right.
Sort of synchronized everything so that it really works like clockwork.
That's right. We've formalized the whole setup, essentially, the arrangements between airports who have been there a very long time. INGV has formalized them a little bit. We have new equipment to do actual measurements so that when it comes over us, we can actually measure it. I should emphasize there is no, normally no hazard to the civilian population. There's not much that can be done, and it doesn't do anything much to anybody anyway. The problem is aircraft engines, which have to be kept well away from the volcanic ash, essentially.
What about future plans? Okay, this was a project, and when your goals have been reached, I presume.
Yes, I mean the projects last a year or two, but after they finish, we continue cooperating, and we intend to be doing that for the next 5 or 10 years. Well, I'm retiring in 10 years' time, so beyond that, I can't really tell.
But still,
talking about the system goes on functioning, and the contacts become better and better, and the arrangements more and more sophisticated, so we can deal with this sort of thing in the future.
But since I've known you, you've always been involved in projects, so I presume that you're not going to close the book on projects completely. What else have you got in mind for your now very valuable, in the sense of instrumentation, Jordan Lighthouse?
The big question now is actually the shipping, you know. Shipping is contributing very much to Malta's ozone, very high ozone concentrations. Also, we suspect nitrogen oxides and sulfur dioxide, which we are preparing a publication on this right now. We see also the sulfur dioxide and nitrogen dioxide emissions from Etna itself. These travel at different rates from volcanic ash, but they also come over. We see them with our instruments and we correlate them with the model. So everything seems to be working quite nicely. And we need to estimate from these the effect on the greenhouse gases, which we measure as well. And the effect on the greenhouse gases will, of course, lead to climate change. I could perhaps say as an aside that I'm just going through a publication by the American Meteorological Society. It's about 280 pages, but the summary is one page, fortunately. What was predicted to occur in 2050-2060 for climate change actually seems to be taking place now. With the events, the extreme events we have had in the weather in the past 10 years, the heat waves, the extreme rain in the northern areas, these are all a consequence of the jet stream having changed its course due to the melting of the polar ice cap, which will probably be ice-free within 20 years' time or possibly even less. So the weather is changing around us and we need to stop emitting greenhouse gases.
Yes, I always ask you this question because I think a lot of people who start doubting climate change and often tell me, oh, well, it's always been like this. But when they come out with these suggestions, they have factored in the natural changes.
Yes, the natural changes have been factored in. If anything, we should be getting cooling now for the next couple of hundred years. But we have not only overridden the cooling, but we've injected so much greenhouse gas into the atmosphere, we're actually having a heating up effect now. And the ice at the North Pole is melting. There is no doubt about it. Very, very fast.
Well, that's something that can be seen. You might not be able to see volcanic ash in the sky, but you can certainly see the
glaciers melting in the Alps. It's causing all sorts of problems, and we have to adapt and survive. Mm. And the changes are on us, we think, much faster than was predicted. Again, we don't know exactly why. It's not easy to model this sort of thing on a 100-year scale. The models are getting better and better, but certainly the statistical correlation over the past 100 years is that we are actually getting climate change now.
Amazing. As far as Malta is concerned, in a Mediterranean context, do you feel that over these years there, perhaps through European projects or perhaps in other ways, do you think that the West knows what the East is doing and the South and the North? Do you feel that there has been a growth in collaboration around the Mediterranean area?
Generally speaking, yes. Scientists of all countries come together quite often and quite regularly, and we all cooperate with each other and with the meteorological services. In fact, our results go to WMO, the World Meteorological Organization, which coordinates all these programs, essentially. They accumulate the data, they publish it every year. All our data is available online, perhaps not in real time, but certainly they can be downloaded from the WMO website. And we are going into a near real-time arrangement fairly soon as well, so you can look up within 15 minutes what has been measured at Jordan Lighthouse. And that will tell you what's happening in the Mediterranean, together with other stations in Greece and Barcelona.
In the Met Office as well, you feel that cooperation has improved?
Yes, as Professor Lourdes is quite rightly saying, we participate heavily in research with other countries. In fact, just about in last May, we presented our studies to a French university which was coordinating precipitation, that means rain, in the Mediterranean region between Malta, Italy, Tunis, and the North African countries, because the weather is changing, because we are getting less rain, but much heavier in short periods of time, while to the northern Europe they're getting much, much more rain, actually in summer, like typically what happened in UK this summer. And the results, we cooperate very closely together. We send to the World Meteorological Organization, WMO, daily our meteorological statistics, that means winds, temperatures taken night, day, so that they all go into these super models, whereby it is true that there is a climate change change tendency. And as you can see from Malta already, that in a short span of time we had two heat waves. And quite classical, last Tuesday, the temperatures at 5 in the afternoon were very, very high above the normal. That was 6 to 7 degrees above the normal, which is a clearly indication of a climate change. So it is very important for us as a Met Office to very closely monitor what's going on in our region, in the Mediterranean region, and I would say we are one of the most also advanced meteorological entity, as we have just invested €250,000 in a new, it is called automatic weather stations equipment, which takes into a computer model, and we are much better now to predict and to forecast. And obviously we look very, very closely to work with Professor Lul and the university, let's say for the benefit of weather.
For our benefit, I hope. So, well, we come to the end of our program. I'd like to thank Professor Ray Elul and Mr. Joseph Schiavone from the Meteorological Service at MIA, and say thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.